Back together again, you and I chatting it up round the wireless Thursday style, March 13th, 2025 on Connecticut Today. We welcomed, of course, as we do every Thursday, only in Bridgeport, blogger Lenny Grimaldi to the show. He chatted about a promised no-confidence vote regarding the Bridgeport police chief by the police union's rank and file. Former Reagan White House staffer Frank Lavin stopped by to talk about his new book, Inside the Reagan White House, A Front Row Seat to Presidential Leadership with Lessons for Today. And we chatted about the current Trump White House tariff policies and controversies as well. And finally, Beatles expert Eric Taros dropped by on this Sunday's showing of 90 minutes of rare Beatles film footage at the Palace Theater in Danbury.
And of course, there's a lot going on in the Park City. There always is. Folks wait for these segments. They've told me that. They know their Thursday is ready to wind down. But we have Lenny Grimaldi on with OnlyInBridgeport.com. A lot to talk about today. Lenny, how are you?
Uncle Paulie, if your audience is waiting for me, they have no life.
No, I've heard that. Man, I get emails on it. I get text messages on it. I'm not kidding you. I am not kidding.
Yeah, my former boss probably writes you as well, right? Yeah.
He's too busy slapping a tariff on you. Man, oh, man. Oh, man. All right. Well, Lenny, what's up with the no confidence vote here? Again, you know, you and I were chatting about this. Doesn't seem like a big deal, but is it? Is it not? What's the deal here?
So I've been in touch with Mike Salemi, who's the police union leader, mm-hmm. In the police department. And no, this is not new. In my lifetime covering, you know, the city for, should I say it, almost 50 years?
Beautiful.
Oh, my God.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Almost as old as you. But, you know, It's not. It happens. It, particularly in recent history, you know, the police union will vote a no confidence vote against the police chief.
Yeah.
It's happened for a while. In this particular case, it's some of the police union leadership, they're not happy with how Chief Porter has allocated overtime,
okay,
promotions, assignments, and so on. And so they haven't made an official vote. I said the union leadership has gotten together and say, we're not happy about it. So there was kind of an internal vote. And now at some point, according to Mike Salemi, that they will put it out for a complete vote. So all the entire rank and file union membership can issue a vote on this. As for Chief Porter, Mayor Joe Ganim has come to his defense and mm-hmm. said, look, you know, crime has been down in his 2.5 years. He's really good at community policing. I hear what the union is saying, so, you know, we're not going to dismiss, you know, your concerns,
sure,
about your relationship with the chief. But, mm-hmm. you know, that's the situation that we're in. But, you know, I think it goes with, you know, I'd like to say it's the nature of the beast.
Sure.
You know, I always say cops and cons are always complaining, right? the nature of the situation that they're in,
uh-huh,
and when you allocate overtime and some people don't get it,
yeah,
others are going to be, why not us? And when you issue promotions and some people don't get them, they're going to say, why not us? Assignments, right, and so on. So it just goes along.
So is this just, Lenny, kind of a flare, hey, this is the stuff we would like to fix. You know, we don't want to do this, but, you know, we're vocal about this. So do something about the overtime or do something about the scheduling. Is that what is it? Do they see this as a means to an end on some of the stuff here?
I'm not sure that they do. I'm not sure that even if they issue a complete, you know, lack of confidence, anything is going to really change.
Mm-hmm.
If they can get the chief's attention and he says, listen, I hear you, and they can get a little bit back.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it may be, you know, let's declare victory and move on. Right.
Yeah.
That kind of a thing. But I don't think you're going to see anything dramatically change. Even if they vote, you know, lack of confidence in the chief.
Sure.
It's just kind of like the way it works in the Bridgeport PD and just that other PDs as well.
Oh, absolutely. Lenny, you write here that City Democratic head Mario Testa is weighing some party maneuvers. What might the maneuvering be all about, Lenny?
So the State Democratic Party, based on a complaint that came from a city resident, has notified Democratic Town Committee Chair Mario Testa that the local bylaws of the party don't allow the treasurer to reside outside the city.
Mm-hmm.
So this is important to Town Chairman Mario Testa because the treasurer is Marie Heller. She's been involved in city politics on the government payroll.
Yeah.
You know, for decades, he has a great relationship with her. She writes clean reports, right? She doesn't live in Birchwood. She lives in Shell.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants to change the local rules and bring in the Democratic Town Committee to vote that the treasurer can live outside of Birchwood.
Okay.
And so he's got a lot of support for her. He's got some people pushing back. But he really wants this done because – you've got a municipal cycle right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a mayoral cycle. It's municipal for Bridgeport Board of Education and City Council. He wants to do some fundraising, and he wants to have his, you know, a treasurer in place without having to installing someone new.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he gets too much pushback on this, there's a workaround. He can install a titular head
sure.
as treasurer to review and sign the reports and have Marie Heller still do the bookkeeping on it. So That's a work in progress. He's going to bring, you know, at some point, the town committee in. It's 90 members to vote on this. But he also wants to do something else, which is intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
So he also is thinking about reducing the size of the town committee from 90 to 70 members. And people mm-hmm. go, what is the town committee? Town committee basically, these are the people who do the party business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, endorse people for public office, you know, put in the grunt work of the phone calls
mm-hmm.
and people on the ground and fundraising and so on. He wants to reduce the size of the town committee from 90 members to 70 members. So it's like seven per district. There's 10 districts. So right now there's 90. He wants to reduce it. That would take a vote. You know, why does he want to do this? He's saying that it's harder to fill positions. You don't have the party discipline as you used to. And then plus, if he reduces it from 90 to 70, that's 20 less people he has to make left. Right? I don't have to make 20 people happy. I don't have to worry about it because when you're a town chairman,
oh, yeah.
and you're on the town committee, I mean, you think you're important, right?
Yeah.
Because you have a vote.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, I think it becomes a little bit more manageable for him.
Sure.
There's 90 people knocking on my door. I only have 70 right now to make happy. I think that's part of it also in play. So there'll probably be a meeting within the next couple of weeks. There'll be
yeah.
some screaming and yelling along the way, and you know, he'll figure out some, I guess.
Guess so. Lenny, finally, we haven't spoken since since I guess that Monday meeting this past Monday night, right, on charter revision. How did that go? Any news out of that? What were your thoughts on that? What happened?
Nothing dramatic. I mean, the turnout was not what they wanted.
Yeah.
I think 8 people showed up. You know,
eight? Mostly. Wait, no, hold on. 8?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think part of it is that there wasn't a whole lot of time to promote it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think former state rep Chris Caruso had a lot of good ideas. I think those are definitely in play. We talked about it last week.
Yeah.
That they're going to consider for charter revision, that
mm-hmm.
you know, to take a look at the rules and regulations that govern the city of Bridgeport.
Yeah.
So we had some people that went up there. I don't know. Maybe they'll probably have another public hearing.
I hope so.
I think the way it was put together, there wasn't really a lot of time, you know, to promote public input. So it wouldn't surprise me if they had another one of those or two of these things to get, you know, public input. You know, I mean, if, you know, is there going to be like a portal where people could like write in?
Sure.
Provide something? I'm not sure yet. I got to check that out. But we'll see. There's 13 members.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be meeting regularly, and we'll see what they come up with to see what they do to modernize the city charter.
Nice, nice. Parade tomorrow. Are you marching? Or what is it? Is it?
No, I'll follow you.
I was in the Norwalk parade a few days ago. You didn't see me there? No. Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Did anyone recognize you?
No. Tomorrow's Melissa. Melissa's in the parade
Really?
Yeah, she's in the Bridgeport Parade and the Milford Parade on Saturday. Yeah.
Well, that is pretty cool. So, you know, think about it. This parade, the St. Patrick's Day Parade,
yeah,
was always, for decades, was in downtown Bridgeport.
Yeah.
And after, because of COVID, it was delayed. They moved it to Black Rock. Mm-hmm. And they have a really great turnout,
yeah,
in Black Rock. So it's going to be tomorrow. So the parade route is basically Fairfield Avenue,
yeah,
from Burroughs Community Center to the Black Rock Castle along Fairfield Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to my site, Only in Bridgeport, beware of the parking situation,
uh-huh,
because a lot of people show up for this stuff.
Oh, sure.
Because it's in Black Rock, you know, it's on the edge of Fairfield.
Mm-hmm.
So
wait a minute. Are you saying that people in Fairfield kind of migrate over and become honorary Bridgeport residents for the day? Is that what we have?
Absolutely. But I have news for your audience.
Yeah.
There's no Black Rock Fairfield. Black Rock is in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Black Rockers, they want to think they're in Fairfield, but they're actually in Bridgeport.
Oh, believe me, yeah, we've got some staff members here at Connoisseur who live, and they say, yeah, you know, I live in Bridgeport, but I'm in Black Rock. Yeah,
yeah. I'm in the Black Rock section of Bridgeport, right? Isn't that great? I love that.
It's like when I was where do you live? I live in New Haven. Yeah, but I'm in Westville. Oh, you're in Westville. Okay.
Every time someone says to me, "I live in Black Rock," yeah, oh, you live in Bridgeport. Yeah. Answer your question. Yes, it's, you know, on the border of Fairfield, a lot,
yeah,
of Fairfield people come in.
Yeah,
you know, it really is a great parade.
It
a
is.
Lot of work goes into it. It really is, and you know, a lot of the destinations along Fairfield Avenue, mm-hmm, really benefit from this. You know,
yeah,
you know, the eateries and the pubs,
sure,
and so on. And so, just be careful where you park tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be parking on Fairfield Avenue, right in the center of Black Rock,
mm-hmm,
right? Because that's not going to be good.
No,
Beware of that. But
no,
it's a great time.
It is, and I was in the Bridgeport Parade one year, and it was great. I said, "Wow, look at all these people!" No, they really get into it, Lenny. You're right. It really is a good time. And then they looked at me and they said, "Oh, you're that guy." Okay, whatever. All right.
Well, a few Italians in the parade, you know. Well, the parade was started by an Italian mayor. Lenny Paoletta started. It took an Italian to organize an Irish parade. What do you want to say
about that? Lenny Grimaldi, of course. Go right now to the website, onlyinbridgeport.com. All the stuff that's happening, and a lot of times more in-depth reporting than you may get at the other sites. Hey, Lenny, thanks. Be good. Have a happy weekend, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you.
See you next week. Thanks.
All right, Lenny Grimaldi, only at Bridgeport.com. Got to talk to this gentleman. I love presidential history. I love books like that. I listen to or read as many as I can. Our next guest is a visiting fellow of the Hoover Institution back in the Reagan White House. He served on the National Security Council and the White House staff. He later served in the Bush 41 and 43 White Houses. In the latter, he also served as ambassador to Singapore and undersecretary for international trade at the Department of Commerce and the private sector. Our guest served in senior finance positions in Hong Kong and Singapore with the Bank of America and Citibank. The name of the book, it's brand new. In fact, it's coming out in 5 days. But it's called Inside the Reagan White House, the front row seat to presidential leadership with lessons for today. A big hello to Frank Lavin, who joins us. Hey, Frank, it's Paul here in Connecticut. How are you?
Paul, thanks for having me on. I'm doing great. I'm in San Francisco today, right by Hoover.
Oh, man, one of the great, well, I know they've had their problems, but Frank, that is one of the great American cities. I have visited there twice, and I don't know about you, but I love San Francisco. I really do.
San Francisco's got a lot of charm, and you're right. They have not dealt effectively with some of these problems like homeless and street crime, but
mm-hmm,
they've got a new mayor.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of optimism, and we're going the right way.
Excellent. You folks out there at Hoover, out there in Palo Alto, you've got a great locale as well. So, Frank, I can't wait to, I'll probably listen to this as an audiobook, Inside the Reagan White House. Did you always plan to do this? Was it just the right time? Because it sounds like between Mr. Reagan and the Bush families and all your positions, you must have some great memories.
Yeah, it just came in the last few years. I was living in China and in Southeast Asia so a little bit limited. But when I got back to the U.S. during COVID, I had a few years, and I got to the Reagan Library 8 or 10 times to go through the papers, go through the files, go through the recordings and the videos, and it all kind of came back. And then I had my own notes and my own conversation. So mm-hmm. it was a project of the last few years. And I think the time's right, because when a person fades a bit from history, you can look more conceptually, more abstractly. What was that presidency all about? What did he contribute? What lessons are there? And it's not a day-to-day fistfight over one speech or one bill or one idea, yeah. but a broader, I'd say, fairer evaluation of the man.
You know, Frank, you're obviously observing what's going on with the Republicanism today with Mr. Sure. Trump, and then yeah. you work with both Bush presidents, and you go back to yeah. Ronald Reagan. So contrast those three, yeah. what you see and experience in types of yeah. leadership with the Republican Party right now.
Yeah. Well, stylistically, there are some big differences. There are some similarities in some of their policies. But, boy, stylistically, Reagan always tried to present his ideas as inclusively as possible. He wanted as many people to follow him as possible. And mm-hmm. his view was, if somebody's with me half the time, they're still my friend. If somebody's with me 30% of the time, they're still my friend. Because maybe next time they'll be with me 40%. But I don't want to have permanent enemies. I don't want to denigrate or stigmatize anybody, and I want to just present my ideas in as upbeat and inclusive a way to allow anybody from any walk of life to support me. So it's a very different nowadays. Most politicians just play to their base, play to their constituency, mm-hmm. trash the other guy, a lot of grievance politics. So it's a very different world than a few decades ago.
Frank, you served at one time as Undersecretary for International Trade of the Commerce Department, yeah. so you must be locked in here on literally yeah. this scenario that's changing hour to hour with yeah. Mr. Trump yeah. and his tariff policies. Is this driving you nuts?
Yeah, I got to tell you something. I think a lot of the concerns about China are valid concerns, because I think China is frequently not a good trading partner, but the trade complaints about Canada, Mexico, and Europe, as well as Australia, mm-hmm. Those aren't particularly valid in my view, meaning those are rule-based societies. We might have problems here and there, but they follow the rules. You can generally work it out in normal negotiations. We would never just go all out and say we're unhappy with Europe and we're slapping tariffs on you. And tariffs hurt the country that imposes them as much as the target country. So tariffs are kind of a clumsy weapon. It's like driving your car by using your horn. it doesn't get you very far. It creates a lot of friction, a lot of cost. And it's, I think, a huge surprise to Canadians, because they would say, look, if you've got a problem, let's have lunch. Tell me about your problem and let's see if we can fix it. But we never really slap tariffs broadly on Canada, Mexico, Europe, the way Trump is doing.
Mr. Trump talks about Frank Lavin all the time. He likes to use this phrase. Well, you know, they're reciprocal, Frank. Don't you understand? These yeah. are reciprocal yeah. tariffs. Is that valid to you or not? And what is he trying to say? Explain a reciprocal tariff here. What's he
yeah,
trying to do?
I think I know what he's trying to do, that he's saying if country X puts tariffs on American tomatoes of 50%, we're going to put tariffs on their tomatoes of 50%. But we'd say, but that is something very different than we'd pursued historically. Historically, we said we kind of don't care how high your tariffs are. What we're trying to do is just reduce them. And mm-hmm. we understand everybody's got their politics. And you might have a very strong tomato lobby or tomato God knows what. And it might be very tough for you to move on tariffs. That's okay if you can't move on tariffs. But move on car parts or move on something else. Mm-hmm. And if we get an aggregate basket that is of value to us, we're happy. We declare victory, meaning we didn't seek or need a one-for-one tomatoes for tomatoes, because every country's got a different political system, and some guys can't move. So Australia couldn't move on sugar. We can't move on sugar, but we can move on a lot of other things. So we moved on everything else but sugar, and we signed a free trade agreement with Australia. But we viewed that as a victory, not the fact there's still residual tariffs and problems in the sugar place, because everything else is open.
Frank Lavin is the guest. The forthcoming book, Inside the Reagan White House, a front row seat to presidential leadership, with lessons for today. Did tariffs, Frank Lavin, when you were working with the Bush White Houses and Mr. Reagan, were tariffs all that big of a deal? Because I don't remember hearing a lot about it. Maybe they were.
Tariff is lightly used, Paul. They were not a big deal. They were not yeah. It was not your national trade policy, but tariffs were a way, if there was an imperfection, you'd occasionally, and if they were light touch or limited. If you said we're unhappy with Japanese steel exports, mm-hmm. we think they're being unfair, we're going to apply tariffs. We did that. So they're very discreet, almost surgical application. We would never go to a whole country like Japan and say everything you do we're going to tariff, because Japan is a friend and they do play by the rules, but there's some things they do that annoy us. So we're trying to fix what is broken, but we're not trying to throw the friendship in the trash can.
You know, Frank, you mentioned this just a couple of seconds ago, and you use a word that's a favorite of mine when I try to sit here and analyze with my local listeners the effect that what Mr. Trump is doing may have on Connecticut. You know, I've always said it's better to use a scalpel when you can rather than a sledgehammer, and sure. that's what I see sure. now. That must drive you nuts.
Well, it's amazing. Something like six times as many Americans work in industries that use steel than make steel. So lower steel prices create jobs in America, and higher steel prices hurt jobs in America. But all the auto industry, construction industry, appliance industry, those folks need steel. So Trump says, boy, I really have a victory here because we're taking steel prices up. That's going to kill auto jobs. That's going to kill construction. It's going to defer. People are going to freeze. Nobody's going to start a new construction project and say, Donald Trump just added $1 million to my office building, so I can't do it right now. So so it's a false victory, so to speak, to say, boy, we shut down inexpensive steel imports or inexpensive aluminum imports because it's going to hurt jobs in America.
Let's talk about, in the couple of minutes we have left, Frank Lavin, the two polar opposite poles of the Republican Party. Look, people can hate Donald Trump all they want, and I say that on my show all the time. They do. Here's a guy who won in 2016. He won in 2024. He only lost by an aggregate about 40,000 votes in three swing
right.
states
right.
in 2020. What is his it's got to be more than just being a bully, Frank, isn't it? What
right.
has he rewritten the rules here?
I agree. First of all, he does have enormous strengths. We're talking about what I think is his weaknesses on tariffs, but he has considerable strengths mm-hmm. as well. He's got a commanding stage presence.
Yeah.
He has a sort of very clear-eyed view of what he's trying to do, where he's trying to go, and he is able to key in on the Democrats' weaknesses, and they had two huge weaknesses that were largely self-inflicted. One was the border and yep. open immigration, and God knows why Biden went down that path. By the way, Obama had border controls. Obama had remain in Mexico.
Yeah.
Obama didn't have catch and release. So Biden goes to the left of Obama. Biden says, we're going to move. It was Mayorkas is the real devil figure, I mm-hmm. think. But that was a huge, huge problem for him and then for Kamala Harris. And the second one was some of the woke and DEI and transgender, some of the cultural issues, which really just, I think, said to middle America, look, I'm ideologically rigid, and I'm from a different planet. I'm just from a different place than you yeah. are. If I'm going to go completely woke, and if I want boys playing in girls sports and so forth, I think it's just off-putting to a lot of folks. And God knows why they went so orthodox down that path, but they sure did.
Frank, final question. Could your old boss, Mr. Reagan, be elected today?
That's an interesting question because, you know, he enjoyed being upbeat. He would never say anything negative about his opponent. He was always trying to be genial. And I don't know if we have the market for somebody like that, who's basically just a pleasant person. But it looks like we're in an era of sort of friction and combat and theatrics and lightning bolts. And it's really an interesting question to say, is there a market for someone who doesn't play that way, who wants to be pleasant?
And finally,
so I think it's
let me ask you this, because this just popped into my head. Did you ever see him angry? Did he ever really get angry?
He had, you know what, when somebody, so to speak, really stepped on his toes, yeah. metaphorically, he never reacted with a loud voice or yeah, but there was a timber in his voice. His voice just kind of constricted a bit. Well, I knew because I spent a lot of time with him. I said, that guy really stepped on his. By the way, it reminded me, I had another boss, Colin Powell, who's very much the same way in terms of temperamentally incredibly even keeled, just like Reagan, very, very even keeled. He would never raise his voice, never swear. But you could tell when somebody really insulted him or really lied to him or something really irritated, I could tell. It's like a storm cloud crosses his face. He was very, very controlled. He would never say, you lying son of a gun. He would never do that. And Reagan would never do that. But you said, boy, you really crossed a line with this guy, and Reagan's going to remember that, and you burnt some bridges there, my friend. So,
wow.
But he never radiated anger. He never was electric in his emotions. He was always a very, very controlled guy, very genial guy.
Frank, I can't wait to read this. All good luck, folks. It's coming out March 18th. You can pre-order now at Amazon. Inside the Reagan White House, a front row seat to presidential leadership with lessons for today. Frank Lavin has been a guest. Frank, it's been a pleasure. Good luck, and hopefully we can chat down the road.
Thanks, Paul. Look forward to it. Thanks so much for having me on.
Appreciate it. Frank Lavin, how about that? Worked for both Bushes, Mr. Reagan as well, Commerce Department. Man, what a great life, apparently. How about the Beatles? My next guest has incredible expertise in the Beatles in film, especially rare footage. Now, he has contributed to the Ron Howard Beatles film 8 days a week, the HBO BG special, Beatles 64. It was on Disney Plus, so much more. He is apparently, they tell me, the go-to guy for film producers who either need or need an evaluation of rare archival Beatle footage. How about that? There is an event coming up this Sunday at the Palace Theater in Danbury he's taking part in. Eric Taros is the guest. Hey, Eric, it's Paul at WICC. How are you?
Paul, I'm doing great. Nice to be on The Voice of Connecticut.
Well, we try here. You know, I do my feeble little best here Monday through Friday from 2 to 6. But, you know, Eric, it's been such a down day in news. Our pal Charles Rosene got in contact with me and said, hey, could you do this? I said, absolutely. So, number one, before we talk about the event coming up Sunday in Danbury, talk about your expertise here. And why is it you, Eric, that's considered one of the go-to guys for Beatles footage? What's up with that?
Because of an original fan. I was a little kid, but I was an original fan back in 64, and I was tutored by the great underground collectors of Beatles film and rock and roll film and audio, guys like Joe Pope, Jason Brabazon. So these guys, I was taken under their wing as a teenager. I was actually in radio just like you once on a kids talk show back in the day.
Nice.
And they tutored me, and I got the expertise grew over 50 plus years. And I got a big break one time many years ago when Apple Corps Limited in London called me and said, hey, would you help out? We're doing this thing with Ron Howard. And I've never looked back.
Now, in retrospect, Eric, there are some bands that there's gobs of video and film of. There are other bands and other acts in music, not just rock and roll, but country acts, blues acts, jazz acts. Some of these acts are great, but there's very little video or film of them. Where do the Beatles rank in that whole thing? A lot, a little, in the middle? How much is out there?
I would say for their time period, the Beatles are remarkably well covered.
Okay.
I mean, nowadays there's, everybody's got everything. There's so much media, and a lot more of it is easier to preserve.
Yeah.
You know, things are pretty primitive, and I'm basically like one of these guys putting a dinosaur skeleton back together because, somebody will have shot a little 8mm home movie of a Beatles show, and it comes to the surface, 50, 60 years later, and it's silent. They don't know what it is. Well, part of my training, part of what I do for the movie companies, they'll come to me and say, we got all this silent film of Jim Morrison. We don't know what the hell he's doing. Where we got all this film of the Beatles playing. What songs are they playing?
Wow.
And one of the things I will do is dub underneath and say, okay, this is the song exactly. When you come to the show at the Palace, 3 p.m. this Sunday the 16th, you'll see a lot of this. One of my favorite pieces in the whole project is a song that got rejected from 8 days a week because we couldn't finish it in time. And it was a request of Olivia Harrison, George's widow.
Okay.
And she said, could we have George from singing a live song? Because he did Roll Over Beethoven on the 64 U.S. tour.
Okay.
And could we put together the whole song live, but from different cities, from the fans filming it?
Yeah.
And that's one of the great things you'll see. I mean, it's one of my favorite pieces. People love it. And one of the things we say about this too, Paul, there is a lot out there. There's a ton of Beatles stuff on YouTube. But the stuff at our show cannot be seen anywhere. It's all for my private collection. A lot of it is stuff that got left out of movies or were proposed for movies and rejected for one reason or another. And there's even a thing you'll see that's never been shown anywhere publicly. Disney Plus came to me and a couple of other people in Hollywood, and we were supposed to do a six-hour Beatles television project about the 64 tour. It might still happen.
Wow.
And what I'd love for people to come and see what we call the sizzle reel. It's about 10 minutes long. It's a demonstration of what the series would look like. I'm going to ask the audience, okay, guys, be cruel. What did you think? What did you like? What didn't you? So there's audience participation in our show, too.
Eric Taros is the guest, renowned Beatles film archivist, and he is teaming up with another one of my buddies here, Charles Rosenay. Again, the show. Eric, give us the particulars. This coming, Palace Danbury, this coming Sunday, 3 o'clock, right?
Yeah, so matinee shows are really fun. You can, you know, it's a less strain than getting out, like, oh, you know, you're worrying about getting around. Anyway, general admission, $35, it's 90 minutes long, and as I say, it's really action-packed. We called it 60 years of the Beatles in America, but it's really their entire career. I mean, I've even got, to every phase of their career. And one of the coolest things you're going to see is some sections of the show were actually recently re-scanned in 4K, and I've re-put together the pieces, and it looks better than Blu-ray. I mean, some of this stuff, most all of it has never been seen. But if you like things like, Penny Lane, for example, that Penny Lane video that we show is all made out of outtakes from their original shoot, plus other things that were shot for it at the time in 67, and people go nuts when they see it.
How much, Eric, and you talk about people saying, hey, I think my grandmother or grandfather shot this. I think they told me about it. They went to a Beatles show. Is there still a lot out there, or have we reached the peak now of what do you think you'll ever be able to find?
I always tell people, what I do is a little bit like if you ever go to Hawaii and you see the Arizona, the ship sank, 80 years ago, but every day there's oil leaking to the surface.
Yeah.
And somebody's got to go skim that oil, and that's what I do. To give you an example, just last night I won an auction for 3 reels of Paul McCartney and Wings in San Francisco that I've never been seen.
I'm telling
you. That's one of my next projects.
You know what? Can I tell you something, Eric? I maintain Wings is still such a criminally underrated band. I'm telling you, watch their live performances. They were great. And you read how McCartney's like, whatever. I really wasn't into it. What? Are you serious?
He was into it at the time. I attended May 22nd, 1976 at the Boston Garden, one of the greatest shows I've ever seen.
Yeah. All right, coming up.
He's just, that's the way he is anyway. Hey, thank you for the time. Everybody would love to see you. And, Paul, thank you for the time.
All right. Thanks, Eric. Eric Taros, you heard that. What he has in this show. This is not a free show, folks, but it's something that I wanted to publicize because it's fun. And there's not enough fun out there going on. So, again, it's at the Palace Theater in Danbury. It's at the Danbury Palace. This coming Sunday at 3:00. Go online. ThePalaceDanbury.com.